You are listening to Clearly Connected, a podcast that inspires new ways to reconnect to ourselves and to our loved ones in a world where so many of us are disconnected. I'm your host, Carrie Doan. I'm a life coach, an entrepreneur, an advocate for change, and a believer in all things possible. Today, I'm joined by my guest and renowned therapist, Debbie Hackett, to talk about the shadow of shame that we all carry. We talk about how it impacts us personally and culturally, and ultimately, how we can kick shame's ass. I'm so glad you're here to join us as we move closer to a more deeply connected way of living. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I am thrilled and honored to have my guest, Debbie Hackett, here to talk about this dark shadow that lurks behind nearly all of us, and that is the shadow of shame. So together, she and I plan to unpack what shame is, why most people in our culture struggle with it, and how to use the power of vulnerability to release it so that we can be free to live our lives from that more authentic and empowered position. So before we dive in, let me take a second to introduce you to my guest, Debbie. Debbie has been a behavioral health therapist for over 35 years. And in her work, she weaves together the fields of counseling, education, and facilitation. What I love too is that she offers this signature quarterly workshop on authenticity that is designed for people who are seeking to build stronger relationships. And Debbie believes that embracing vulnerability can lead to profound personal growth. And she dedicates herself to creating safe, supportive environments where people can feel empowered to tackle their challenges head on. Whether it's through her one-on-one counseling or group workshops, Debbie strives to inspire and facilitate enduring change. Wow, Debbie, I love that about you. Thank you so much for being here. I'm honored to have you on the show today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I just, in our recent conversations about authenticity and mental health and shame, you and I have such a passion for this topic in particular. And I just think you're going to have a wealth of knowledge and wisdom to share with us about this. So I'm thrilled to just dive in. And to get us started, you know, I always like to ask my guests, if they don't mind, to share a little bit about your personal story. And for you, your story around this idea or belief or topic of shame, and how have you contended that and then kind of come to a more free place of it?
Well, when I was a child, I grew up with, a lot of messages from my parents and from family members. And I grew up in Southern Kentucky, and which is, in the Bible Belt. So there was, it's pretty conservative Christian ideas. And so I grew up with, we're born into sin, and, you have to work avidly daily, minute by minute, to assure yourself love from God and eternal salvation. So with that message, I did as a little kid. I was, like preschool, I was very confident in God's love for me. But as time went on, with the messages of you're too loud, you're too much, don't act ugly, don't be bad, those kind of things. And they were not so shaming as when I was preschool, probably started around 5, I was molested by a babysitter. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel so horrible about it, although I knew that it was not something to talk about. I really didn't think so much about it making me a bad person. But as I got older and really learned about sin and learned about particularly the evils of sexuality, that created a lot of shame for me, mostly because I had not felt guilty about what occurred. And the babysitter was a teenager, and I did not dissuade him. Well, that's not entirely true. He wanted me to put my mouth on his penis, and I bit him. That ended his interest in me. So that was good.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that to, because for me as a 5-year-old, I was playing a game. Or, you know, 5 to 7. So when I got older and learned more about right and wrong, and if you've done wrong, you're doomed. And if you think about having done wrong, you're doomed. So by the time I was 12, I was pretty sure I was doomed to hell. And the shame that comes along with that is, you know, I'm a bad person. So when I was, and that just led to a lot of behavior on my part, acting out, constantly seeking approval and validation, and a lot of that from men. And so I, you know, married young, and I also grew up in a family with a double standard. Boys can do anything. Girls can only do what they're told. So that was... Yeah, that was a struggle for me as well. And of course, you know, I came to later teenage years in the 70s. So, yeah, so I was, you know, part of that whole movement for, you know, civil rights and that kind of thing. And so that, you know, that of course helped some. And then later on, when my life really got bad, I had basically, just self-destructed, couldn't hold a job, drinking and drugging, multiple relationships, single mom, just started an education. And it was at that time that I knew something had to be different. And because of an abusive relationship, I went to talk to, the other thing is I converted to Catholicism in the South, which is almost unheard of. But, I really thought now, because I was married and because the relationship was abusive, I went and talked to the priest and, you know, cause I was pretty sure I was going to be damned even further for getting a divorce. And the priest told me that I was in a abusive relationship and needed to be safe. So that was good, because not everybody that goes through the church gets that kind of support. Right. So I did and got help for myself, and through that learned that I wasn't a bad person trying to be good. I was a person that had a lot of trauma that needed to recover. And that was the beginning of the change for me.
Wow.
To address the shame.
Yes. I love how you just said that, because that is shame so succinctly put. It's believing that you are a bad person at your core. And then that is what manifests, birthed out of the trauma that we experience. And that, to me, when you can connect those dots and make sense of it in that way, I personally find so much more compassion and understanding around why people have addictions or why they make certain decisions. And so, you know, kind of like hearing your trajectory, it makes so much sense why you struggled, right? But then you were able to get free of it. So, yeah, it's really powerful. I'm curious to know, so it sounds like it originated kind of with the religion piece, but then further reinforced by maybe your family culture or the environment in which you were raised. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've heard, and this just resonates so much, is we are told, or in the culture I grew up in, was told all the time what you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
But there was very few things here. Do this. Enjoy this. This is something you can embrace and enjoy and be. And my brothers may have gotten some of that. I'm sure they did. But the women in my family did not.
Mm. Right. Yeah. It's fascinating to look closely even at the gender difference. How we were not given permission to enjoy feeling good in our bodies, especially.
Oh, yes, especially.
Yeah, yeah, the body shame. I mean, that's like a whole nother category. But can you help us understand, like, how did you make that shift? Was it that person, I think you said, at your church who guided you to a safe place? Like, what did that look like? And how did you kind of free yourself from this negative narrative that was so embedded in your psyche at that point?
Well, it was a perfect storm of a lot of little events. When I was a single parent, I was looking to do something where I could provide for myself and my son. And, you know, by the time I was doing that, I had already had more jobs than years I'd lived. Just nothing worked, nothing worked out. And I was not passionate about them nor good at them. But also I didn't know that, you know, I was not satisfied with me. And that lack of satisfaction carried over into everything that I did. So I nothing was giving me satisfaction or feelings of success or validation or any of that. So I always felt like I had to do something else, be somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I went to see this. This really tells you how old I am. I went to Displaced Homemakers.
Okay.
Doesn't that sound like a 50s thing?
Yeah, tell us what it was.
and so I was looking for options, and that's what I told them. I'm a single mom. I don't get child support. I don't know how I can support my son and myself on this, you know, on a server's salary. Mm-hmm. And at that time we were called waitresses. Mm-hmm. So they would talk to me about school, about education. And I had always wanted to go to college, always. So, you know, I felt like they gave me opportunity. They gave me lots of options. You can do, you know, a trade, you can go to college, you can do, you know, what kind of things, what are you passionate about? What do you want to do? And that was the beginning for me, was them. That was before I even converted to Catholicism.
Mm.
And then, so I wanted to be a social worker. And because I wanted to give people options like these ladies had given me.
Yeah.
And during that time, because I talked to you a little bit about the spirit, the religious piece. And so I had been on a spiritual journey, and one of the things I did was studied intellectually history and the Bible and religions, different religions and that kind of thing. And what I found was that the religion that dated back to the time of Christ was Catholicism. So I interviewed a priest and, you know, without going into great detail, that's how I converted. So I was 28 when I actually was confirmed into the church.
Mm. And so was it also in this time period that I'm assuming it sounds like you put yourself through college also while being a single mother?
Right. I was in college at that time. Yes. And I was working at the domestic violence shelter.
Okay.
That was one of the things that came up through college, because I wanted to be a social worker, but they told me that was when Reagan was in office, and they told me you better have a backup plan because they're cutting all of the social services. Mm. So I got a job at the shelter as a, I answered the hotline and basically managed the house when no other staff was there. So I thought, well, if I can get a job doing this with no degree, then I could probably get a much better job with a degree. So I had been in computer science, which, by the way, I am math challenged, so that was never going to work. But anyway, so I did go ahead and switch to social work, and it was through, you know, the different courses in social work and the people that I met and the connections I made in my studies, and through the church again in my studies. So a lot of information was coming together for me, but I was still struggling with that. You know, I'm basically a bad seed, and, you know, the best I can do is pray for others and, you know, hope that there's a loophole that I can, you know, be a decent person. And yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I'm curious to know, like, so you're on this journey. When was it that you, I don't know if you had an aha moment or like where you started to see that you weren't bad and like really started living into your more authentic self?
Oh, sure. I started, well, I had gone to therapy and I had gone to AA, but not for myself. I'd gone to Al-Anon and different things. What I found there was in the 12-step program was I wanted what they had, but I thought, oh, well, it's really too bad that I don't have a drug and alcohol problem. And that is called denial, because I truly had one. I just, like most of us, didn't think I did. So anyway, started working the 12 steps with a sponsor who suggested I go to open AA meetings. And then I finally heard a woman from Nashville, Tennessee, share a story that very much resonated with me and was very similar to mine. And so after being abstinent from alcohol and drugs for about 8 months, I admitted I was alcoholic, got a sponsor in AA, and continued the steps in earnest. And that is really where it separated the bad person trying to be good and really connected with the person who needed recovery. This is a person who is suffering from, you know, the disorder of addiction, as well as trauma from her past, not a bad person.
Yeah.
And so that's where it began. And that's where I first heard the piece about not a bad person trying to be good. I'm a sick person trying to be well.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, a lot of what we're talking about, you know, your story is so powerful, but this topic of shame, it reminds me about Brené Brown's work.
And, oh, yes.
You know, that's, I think, a huge piece of what she is trying to do is to at least talk about it so yes. that people can recognize that they are inherently good and that, you know, you can free yourself from this narrative. And so I'd love to know, you know, in your opinion, why do you think so many people struggle with this? Is it a cultural thing? Is it the religion piece? Is it all of it? Or trauma? I don't know. I'm curious to know your thoughts on the source of this pain.
Well, it's all of it. And I think all of us, we're human beings are on a continuum from zero shame to toxic shame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all fall somewhere on there and it ebbs and flows. So it's not a static thing, right? But it is because of the teachings of our society. There are other, like the Christian church, unfortunately, for the most part, most of the denominations teach that you're bad and that you have to work hard to be good. There are others that teach that we are human beings and that it's not whether we're good or bad. It's about how we function in life. So there's many, many belief systems out there, but our belief systems are what create our behaviors and the feelings that come with those behaviors.
Yes. So what you're saying is because our culture has these collective beliefs that are largely centered on, I think I would say, unworthiness or yes. Yeah, that produces the thought or the attachment to that belief at a young age and then gets played out. We feel like maybe too, I think quite often we feel that we need to conform to what everyone else is saying we need to do versus, you know, thinking for ourselves and really examining what do I believe? And I think that, you know, is a part of that journey of authenticity is coming back to what do I think? How do I see myself? Is it good or not good? And so I am with you. And I do think, you know, like in your story, the religion can be a really dominant theme, I think, especially in the Midwest here, where it's it's more prevalent. I just have heard so many stories of, you know, growing up feeling like no good, like I can't win. How do I even become redeemed? There's almost like no way to exit it unless you literally leave the belief system. So
exactly.
Yeah. And it sounds, you go ahead.
It's interesting because there's these little kid reels that I like to watch. They're just so funny and cute. But, you know, they are kids being so honest, being so real, having fun, and they don't have that shame. And I remember I have a brief memory of the time when I knew there was a God and I was in the palm of God's hand. And that at least from the time I was 5 and older was non-existent.
Wow. I know it's amazing. You know, that innocence that we are born with gets stripped away. And I, you know, as we're talking, I remember these distinct moments when I was in my church organization and there was so much being preached about
right
how sinful we were, and I just couldn't get on board with that anymore. I couldn't believe that we are born, an innocent baby is born inherently bad and needs to be redeemed, and it just, you know, but up until that point it was that's what is handed to you. And yeah. So I do think switching that can really change a person's life. And it sounds like that's what happened to you, to me. So yes. I love too that, you know, so much of the work you do is centered around authenticity. And yes. I'd love it, Debbie, if you can just define that word, because I know it's kind of a buzzword right now.
Yes.
How would you put that into your own words?
I actually came up with a list of definitions for authenticity for that very reason.
Yeah.
Because it's such a buzzword. But authentic means original. Mm. It means veritable, real. For people, it is who I really am. At my core. And of course that changes and that's okay too. Mm-hmm. Being authentic is being able to, and I'm going to use an Al-Anon quote here, is to be able to say what I mean what I say and not say it mean. Mm. Now, many, many, many people don't say what they mean. And I say that from experience because there was a time in my life where I would sugarcoat the truth, whatever truth I thought I was telling to you, couldn't recognize it because I wanted it to be palatable to the people I was talking to.
Mm.
And that is so confusing.
Yeah.
For communication and for me. And for the listener, it, for intimate relationships, if I had something that I didn't like that you were doing, well, I would phrase it in such a way that you had no idea that I was being critical because I was so afraid of being rejected.
Yeah. Right.
And to be authentic is to be able to say, this is happening and I don't like it.
Mm.
This is happening and I can't tolerate that.
Right. And,
for example, if somebody is a screamer, they scream and yell at folks. If nobody really likes that, but there are people that cannot tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to say, and I will say it, and usually screaming is not the thing that bothers me. It's the words. So I can say I will not be talked to that way, but that's brand new in the last, 15, 20 years, because before that, I would just stand there in my head going, why are they treating me this way?
Yeah. Right. And we're not really taught to have boundaries.
No. Especially women. Men can have them. Women cannot.
Right.
And I had four brothers. I grew up in a family of four brothers, no sisters. It was me and my mom were the only estrogen in the house. Mm-hmm. And I learned at a very young age that to be male was a good thing. Mm. And to be female was second rate at best.
Mm. Yeah. It's, the more I go on, the more I'm kind of aware of the patriarchal system in which we all operate. It's amazing to me how, those messages have been conveyed for all of our life, and it's changing, but it's embedded within our culture. And even something as simple as laying boundaries as a woman, I think is what is changing that narrative, you know, or like telling the truth, like you said, being authentic and not trying to please other people or gain their approval so much, but being direct and honest as a female. Mm-hmm. Again, I think these are the small things we can do every day. So I'd love to, talk about, because I think in all of this, so there's shame that comes from unworthiness that produces these behaviors, but we want to ultimately become free by living a more authentic life that is, in essence, like, who we are, telling the truth of who we are. Do you think vulnerability, is that the one of the number one things we can do to get there? Or how do you recommend making that journey?
I would say that that vulnerability is coming to the ability to be vulnerable is a process. That's not something where you wake up one day and go, you know what? I am going to go and I'm going to share with somebody the deepest hurts I've ever had and see if that can't change the narrative for me.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
No.
For most of us, right?
Yes.
So it really is a process that begins with, a few people. Mm-hmm. It begins with hearing somebody else tell your story. So, I tell my story, I tell it a lot because somebody, and I might not ever know who they are, will hear my story and know they're not alone.
Mm.
know that somebody else has experienced that and that there is something on the other side of that pain.
Yes. Yes.
So that's how vulnerability for those of us who have, you know, had the transformation through the vulnerability, when we share, we're helping others be able to be vulnerable or at least start that process.
It's so true. It really is. Like I think about, you know, I went through my own radical awakening and process of becoming more authentic. And it was because there was one person in my life who was able to validate my experience and who was able to like name the good in me that I was unable to see for myself. And having that one person who felt safe and trusted to help me kind of like see myself differently, it changed everything. And then that kind of like opens you up to a little more courage to maybe be able to share a little more. And then maybe you go public or to like a group or, but that's the power, I think, of, you know, like you said, either sharing your story or be opening yourself to one or a few people that do feel safe so that you can have them sort of be a mirror to you in a positive way.
And absolutely.
And to name what the trauma that you experienced is separate from who you are as a person. All of that can be so powerful. And so I do agree. It's like we say that word vulnerability, like, oh, just go do it. But it's, I mean, it's a inch by inch, tiny step by tiny step kind of thing for a lot of people. And that's okay. But it is, it's courageous to do it. It really is.
It really is.
Yes. So, you know, kind of along that thread, I would love to ask you, you know, thinking about, okay, we've been programmed and conditioned all of our lives by society. We've had now maybe have these patterns in place to keep us safe or protected, but then that's retracting from how we feel inside. Maybe that manifests in depression or anxiety, but then we have this narrative that's not serving us. So in your opinion, I mean, is it as simple as like, oh, go find that one person who can support you? Or like, how would you recommend somebody include a more self-accepting story into their life? Like, what's a practical thing they could do to kind of move in that direction?
Well, that is a great question. And it has multiple answers because people's personalities are so different. So you have the person that, let's just say, is more introverted. So to talk to them about needing a tribe, about needing a circle of influence, is going to push them further into their cave, right? So how do you work with that person? Well, I mean, if I have contact with them, so clearly I do because I know this about them. So I give them ways to pursue that don't include building a tribe, which can be too overwhelming to them. Mm-hmm. So things like get to know who you are. So take personality tests like the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or, you know, those kind of things. Find out your love language. Find out about yourself. Think about your belief system, what you believe and how you function out of that. So have them do a more intellectual exercise because some personality types are really investigators. That's their strength. So they like to do that kind of thing. Others, you can say things like find like-minded people. So maybe they'll, you know, look for groups that are like-minded, like maybe spiritual versus religious or nature, you know, hikers, things like that. Naturopaths or homeopaths, you know, doing things like that. So you different people, you know, start the process a little differently, mm-hmm. whatever's comfortable for them. But the one thing I tell most people right from the very beginning, when I'm working with them on how to feel better pretty quickly. And that is, how would you behave right now if you didn't have any shame? Mm. And we talk about that. What would you do? Well, I would have more self-esteem. Okay, you'd have more self-esteem. So how would your behavior be different? How would people know? How would you know that you have more self-esteem? Well, I'd go for that job, or I'd talk to that person. I'd make a new friend. Oh, okay. So let's do those things until they become a habit. Once they become a habit, they change the brain. Mm. So now you feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe that's something like speaking to somebody at work. You know, somebody that you don't feel like you've got a voice with. Mm-hmm. So you try in small ways, like, hi, how are you? You know, not, I need to talk to you because you've been getting on my nerves or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. But so you practice those behaviors that exhibit more self-confidence until you feel more self-confident.
Mm.
And then as you go along that path, you can add in things like building a circle of influence, like attending groups, if that's not been your thing. For others, it becomes really experiential because they're great at being in a circle of people, but they're still intellectualizing. So they need a more physical grounding, if you will.
Hmm. And tell me about that. Like, if somebody's that type of person, how do you recommend, like, a more somatic practices in the body, or?
Yes, yes. Okay. And actually, I recommend that they do things that they think are kind of, I call it wigwammy, but that's probably not a good word. Some people say woo-woo, you know, whatever. But it is really the more back to the earth kinds of practices, mm-hmm. like take a barefoot walk in a meadow, like go into nature and go inward and see and address how you feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meditate.
Kind of like meditate. Get out of the head and into the body more.
Right. Yoga. Yoga's perfect for grounding. There are a lot of, I use the first term because a lot of practices that I enjoyed in my early journey were more Native American.
Mm.
And so, you know, thanking nature and being in nature and, you know, practices that they were sharing with the rest of the nation, right? And so, I made use of all of those things to be more grounded, more spiritual, more accepting of myself.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I mean, in a lot of ways, you're touching on everything that this podcast represents, which is connecting to yourself, right? But then learning to connect to others in a safe way, and then connecting to our environment. I fully believe, like, even as you're talking about this grounding ourselves in nature, we're so disconnected. I think in our Western culture, we get in our heads, like the rational mind is emphasized so much that we forget the body and that we are inherently connected to this earth. So it's amazing to me the more I kind of get into this work, I realize how powerful those simple things can be, like you said, walking barefoot on a path, on a dirt path. And it does, in a way, kind of connects us to our roots, probably too, our ancestors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I love how you kind of spelled all this out. Like, if it starts with self-awareness, get to know who you actually are in these practical ways, then, you know, you start acting as if, you know, you're maybe not comfortable engaging with people, but you just take those little steps until you do, to build the confidence. and then maybe from there branch out to other people and then build that tribe. Because so many people, I think it feels like a lonely journey to authenticity. When you make that decision to leave the environment that's toxic, you might lose everybody. And then you have to, you got to recreate a tribe. And there's that, I went through it myself, this period of like, where are they? Who can I trust? You know? But they're out there.
And they are out there. And and that's important. I'm so glad you said that, because, you know, there's a huge part of society, particularly when talking about abuse of any kind of oppression. They say, well, why didn't they just leave? Or why didn't they just, you know, get a job and move out? Why didn't they just, you know, go to another country? Why didn't they just do whatever? Well, because of what you just said. When I buck the culture that I'm in, it is a very real chance that I will lose everyone in my life. And how do you move on from that if you don't have another system?
Mm-hmm. Right. And we are tribal creatures. And we need each other. We need to sort of have that sense of belonging, or know that we have support when we make these decisions, and it can be so scary. But I just, you know, when I encourage people along this path, it's like, find one or two, you know, safe people, and hang on, because there's a light at the end of the tunnel if you just continue and lean into it. And that's where you've arrived, it sounds like. I do have this, okay, before we wrap up, I have this this question that's hanging out there for me. Because you said that earlier in your story, you converted to Catholicism. But I'm wondering, like, where have you evolved since then? Like, you stayed in that for a while. And now I know you and I've talked about how you have a much, I think, broader perspective on spirituality. But I'm assuming that beliefs that no longer fit at a certain point. Is that right?
Absolutely. Religion does not have a dominant place in my life at all. Not at all. Mm-hmm. Religion is something I study, which is really validating for the spirituality that I live today. I do believe in a higher power. I do have a very, very spiritual life. It would encompass the positive attributes of most mainstream religions, you know, be good to other people, do unto others as you'd have them do to you. Have integrity. Be who you say you're going to be.
Yes.
Those kind of things. And with a very, very much higher power focused, whether the higher power, I don't define it. Some people say source, creator, universe, goddess, gods. I'm not opposed to any of those. The other thing is I don't care what you're worshiping. If it causes you to do bad things to other people, I'm not for it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And quite often, if there are restrictive rules in place, then I think that often is the outcome, right? Like, if it's the emphasis on, like you said earlier, what you can't do or what you shouldn't do, and there's no freedom in it to be you, then there will be suppressed parts of you that get turned into or manifest into negative behaviors projected onto other people. So I love how you're kind of how you're describing this much more expansive belief system or connection to something bigger in the cosmos. Who cares what we name it? It supports you and it fuels you to help heal people. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Mean, taking the religion of your past and redeeming it and alchemizing it into this other way of being and seeing and believing that is now inspiring and supporting other people. I mean, how much more beautiful and redemptive can you get? So I think it's amazing.
Well, one of the very interesting things is some of my teachers have been very religious people, which is very interesting. But their writings are about, you know, for one example is Rob Bell writes about the Bible. And he writes about critical thinking and, you know, how people read it and perceive it and, you know, what it's really saying and all the things it can be saying was so enlightening to me because like I said, I grew up in the Bible Belt. So, you know, we were memorizing scripture before we could write our names. So that was very eye-opening. And I also practiced Nietzsche and Buddhism for, I don't know, several years. Again, reading about Nietzsche and Buddhism and practicing that, which the goal is world peace there. It's about peace and violence prevention.
Yes.
And these are... they say Buddhism is not a religion, it's a practice, but these are very, very practiced people. Mm-hmm. And they were a lot of my teachers. Mm. And the other teachers were more, you know, the homeopathic people, the herbologists, the shamans, the medicine men and women, those folks. Also taught for me, it was about being open to all information, to look at it critically and to what is my perception of that?
Yes.
What resonates for me in my soul.
Mm. I love that. I quite often say this phrase that I think it's so can be so good to diversify everything. And even as it relates to critical thinking, you know, that's what you've done. And I do it in my life as well. It's like you open yourself to explore all these different opinions and teachings and then kind of pull and see which one clicks for you. And being open to the diversity of all of that wealth of wisdom allows you to have this very rich spiritual life now. Again, that like supports you and serves you, and you have chosen. It's not been imposed upon you. And what a cool place to operate from, like a whole different belief set that is uniquely your own. So
yeah,
I think it's fantastic. And
you talked earlier about the trauma and defining people and how do you change that? One of the questions is, are you your story? And I worked with a lot of people who practiced and utilized the work by Byron Katie. And she would say, no, you are not your story. You're not your story. So if you're not your story, who are you? That's a wonderful journey to take.
what a great question to end on. And I would just kind of add one little caveat to say question it.
Yes.
And challenge that.
Yes.
And really look deep within yourself to find that inner validation to figure out who you are. So I love that. Thank you so much, Debbie, for all of this wisdom. It's just what an amazing conversation. And I want to, before we tie this up, ask you the questions, two questions I ask all my clients, or my guests here.
Okay.
And the first thing I would just want to ask you on a personal or professional note, like what are you up to these days that has you excited?
Well, I am working on really taking my business to a more online presence as well as the in-person presence, and see how they complement each other. So what that looks like is building a lot of content and making it online friendly, which means podcast, YouTube, lessons, modules of training and education, online coaching, face-to-face coaching, that kind of thing. Yeah. So that's got me excited. But what has got me even more excited is my own spiritual journey, which is going to require me to do some more off-grid kind of stuff, which will mean nothing online, no cell phone, you know, walking in the woods.
Yeah.
Or on the beach or, yeah.
Yes. I love that. It's like, what do we call that? Like you go on kind of this lone spiritual journey to access and tap into even deeper wells, maybe of wisdom.
Oh, yes.
And insight. Yes. Yeah. Get rid of all the noise. We need that. Yes. Well, that's exciting about your business. And that kind of bleeds into the next question that I will ask, which is if people are listening and they want to get in touch with all of this content that you're creating or you, how can they find you? Is it social media or do you have a website?
I have a website. It's Deborah J. Hackett, D-E-B-R-A, J as in Jean, Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T.com. That's my website. Through there, it has all my contact information, where my office is located, my phone number, and my email. So I also have a Facebook page, Debbie Hackett Consultant, and that feeds off of Deb Hackett, which is started as my page a long time ago.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely be sure to link all of that in the show notes so people can easily access getting into touch with you or your content, and have that all available for people to check out. So
wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, Debbie, it has been such an honor and a pleasure to have you here. Just like hearing all of your wisdom and your experience and the courageous journey that you've been on to overcome shame. And it really, I think, is just informing us even deeper how to free ourselves from toxicity and lean into vulnerability and claim that authenticity. We also, I think we want somewhere deep down, we all want it. So
I agree.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. Thank you for sharing your time and your insights with us and for being here today.
Well, no problem at all. I look forward to all of our meetings because you definitely bring that resonance. I really resonate with your energy. You bring so much light, spirituality, and connection for me. I so appreciate it. You know, when you're looking for like-minded people, and connection, I really feel like I've connected with you, and I appreciate that so much.
I feel very much the same. It's funny how people just show up sometimes when you least expect it. And there's a nice residence there. So let that be a testament to anybody who's looking for their people.
All right.
You know, they will show up. So yeah, for sure. Just so grateful, Debbie, for you. And, you know, before we sign off, I just invite you, everyone listening, to check out Debbie on her website or Facebook. And, you know, till next time, I encourage all of you who are tuning in to just be gentle with yourself as you examine what shadow of shame might be covering you. And remember that as you choose self-compassion over self-hatred, you will literally rewrite yourself into a new story of freedom and peace. If this episode resonated with you, I have something that you may love. Part of what helps me live a life free of stress and anxiety is embracing genuine connection with myself and others. Building a coaching business centered on this principle has sparked many of my clients to their own success, So if you're looking for a way to overcome your fears and insecurities while building confidence, I invite you to check out my 12-week program, Connect to Your Core, where I help you discover your authentic self so that you can live a life of passion and purpose. I'll link it in the show notes, so check it out if you're interested. I'm so glad you joined us. So remember to stay connected.